It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Yesterday was the groundbreaking for the Foxconn plant. President Trump came by and took credit. Governor Scott Walker, who negotiated the deal, was also on hand. So was Chuck Kornbach. He is the Wisconsin Public Radio reporter out of Milwaukee. He joins us now with an update on this groundbreaking event. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Thank you and good morning.
So the event was groundbreaking in two ways, perhaps. They broke ground and they may have started down the road to an economic development miracle in southeastern Wisconsin, yes?
Well, that started a year ago, according to Governor Walker and President Trump and Paul Ryan and so on, when the Foxconn announcement was first made. And the ground has been torn open for a few weeks now.
So it was symbolic. It was all symbolic.
But this was the symbolic one. Yes.
So set the scene. What was the mood like there?
Well, the groundbreaking, I wasn't there. I was at a speech nearby that Trump gave right after the groundbreaking. But we watched the groundbreaking on giant TV screens from this building. It was a big flag, and Governor Walker, President Trump, Paul Ryan, Terry Goh, the chairman of Foxconn, were all there turning over dirt, and it went very quickly.
So,
they came over and started talking.
So what did they have to say? What did Trump have to say? What did Walker have to say?
Well, both spoke, and Walker first talking about this will be a great brain gain for Wisconsin, the technology jobs at Foxconn. Then Governor Walker and others turned things over to President Trump, who praised Foxconn quite extensively, praised Terry Goh of Foxconn, praised himself. Defended his economic and trade policies. It was a very festive event, food and lights, and Foxconn had some of its technology on display, and I heard one gentleman at the end of it say, "What a day."
Great. So what did Trump have to say in terms of Foxconn coming to Wisconsin?
Well, reviewing sort of how things came together about a year ago in Washington, and how then he brought in people like Paul Ryan and Governor Walker, and the search got underway, and they eventually decided they need a much larger site. These basically farm fields in Mount Pleasant and just off of I-94, and it was all very upbeat. Trump talked about the economic situation in the U.S., unemployment low, and companies coming back, or at least bringing capital back to the U.S. because of the tax package that passed 6 months ago.
So we have a clip of Trump yesterday that you provided for us.
So I gave Scott the ball, and he carried the ball. And if that were football standards, NFL standards, he ran for about 2,000 yards in one game.
So he gave Scott the ball, and he carried the ball. Is that true, that this was really Trump's idea?
Well, I think there's a lot of evidence to show that there was an idea by Foxconn and its investors to have a plant in the U.S., perhaps for political and economic reasons. Trump said he came up and said, well, why not Wisconsin? I mean, Paul Ryan, House Speaker at the time, Wisconsin being a swing state, it wasn't a bad choice politically for the president and the administration to have it here.
We are talking with Chuck Kornbach. Are you excited about Foxconn, or do you have mixed feelings? What do you want to hear from Foxconn as they move forward? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Chuck Kornbach is, of course, our reporter for WPR out in Milwaukee. So there were protesters at this event yesterday, Chuck, including Democratic gubernatorial candidates. What concerns were they raising?
Well, the protests, there were several protests yesterday, one in downtown Milwaukee over immigration, but then also about 2 miles from the groundbreaking and speech-making, there was a gathering in a park in Mount Pleasant where several hundred people were there, and there was band, and there was the Raging Grannies sang some songs, and the basic concern was about corporate welfare, that this $3 billion in state aid and more local incentive money is going to be too much help for Foxconn. We have some audio from a gentleman by the name of Patrick Shelbel, who said the state's incentive package prompted him to join the protest.
I'm not sure why we're doing it. I know it is at this in search of jobs, and I do believe in that also. But I just see that this is something that's almost unheard of.
So given both sides here, what is the big focus? Is there a sense that they could come together on anything?
Well, as Mr. Schauble said, and I've heard it from many other folks in Racine County and southeastern Wisconsin, jobs, more jobs is not a bad idea, even at a time of low unemployment. But Mr. Schauble and many others, most of the Democratic gubernatorial candidates, perhaps all saying the price is too high. Until there's, this is going to be played out over the next several months in the governor's race on this. The governor today is going to be talking more about Foxconn projects. And we'll see after November, maybe some of the heat will die down. And if the project continues, perhaps there'll be less controversy.
The president's visit, though, comes on the heels of his recent criticism of Harley-Davidson, which he then criticized also yesterday. He's touting Wisconsin. He's criticizing Wisconsin's iconic company. How did that work out?
Well, yeah, it was part of his discussion of defensive tariffs and his economic policies, but he's upset that Harley has announced it plans to move some production jobs overseas in response to tariffs that were put on, which were in response to the tariffs U.S. put on some European steel and aluminum. And he sort of all of a sudden got into Harley. We were wondering whether it was going to come or not, but sure enough, he kept up the theme of the week, which was to criticize Harley, saying, you know, build your beautiful bikes here. Don't get cute, he said.
Don't get cute. That's an interesting concept. When this deal was announced, people pointed out that Foxconn has a history of backing out of deals. They backed out of some deal in Brazil, but they broke ground. They're actually turning dirt over there. Does that mean that they are definitely going to build here?
Well, predictions are a little difficult, but it certainly seems that way. But let's review a couple of things that are still lingering out there. The Public Service Commission still has to grant okay for Foxconn's electrical needs, a substation and a short transmission line. The state of Illinois is raising concerns about possible ozone-related pollution from the plant, and the environmental groups have got a contested case hearing coming up with the DNR over Foxconn's plan to bring in several million gallons of water from Lake Michigan as to whether that diversion plan meets the terms of the Great Lakes Compact, that multi-state agreement from 2008. So there are some legal things, potentially more ahead, and of course, as we sort of talked about, Governor Walker has sort of said and sort of suggested that if he's not reelected, what will happen to Foxconn?
Interesting. The jobs talk on this one. I've seen 3,000. I've seen 13,000. I know that Foxconn makes screens for iPhones. They were going to make bigger screens, and now they're making smaller screens. So how many jobs are we expecting, and what are they actually going to do?
Well, the screen making, even with the smaller glass panels, as has been sort of confirmed yesterday after being reported a few weeks ago, that's going to be a part of it. But they've also got plans for a big science and technology park there. There's going to be an autonomous driving vehicle test track. So I think whatever the minds of the geniuses, the engineers and so on, at Foxconn and other related companies can think up, maybe they will try there. They certainly have, more than 2,000 acres of land to develop, and part of it is going to be what they've been saying, but there might be more. The number of jobs, it's not going to be 13,000 right away. It might be a few thousand within a couple of years. President Trump, I think yesterday, said 15,000 jobs, so something that the state and many others will monitor.
We are talking about the groundbreaking at Foxconn that happened yesterday with Chuck Kornbach. He's the Milwaukee reporter who was out there, WPR reporter. The jobs to money ratio, we're giving Foxconn a lot of money. But as you pointed out, there is a whole park. There are a lot of other things that are coming kind of as a complement to Foxconn that we are not, that the state is not giving money to. So we're going to be talking with the next guest about that. How do you think this is going to play out, Chuck?
Well, as I say, in the next few months, and today in Green Bay, there's going to be an effort by the governor to sell Foxconn to more of the state. It looks like, from polling that Marquette has done, that people in southeastern Wisconsin, and you kind of heard Tommy Thompson in the soundbite at the top of the hour saying it's going to be great or create jobs for the southeast. But there's plenty of parts of the state that don't see that economic boon, so to speak, and Governor Walker is going to be trying to convince more people of that. And again, what happens in November might be a factor, and certainly the economy will drive things after that.
Chuck Quirnbach is WPR's news reporter based in Milwaukee. He was talking about Foxconn in Mount Pleasant. They broke ground yesterday. Thanks for joining us, Chuck.
Thank you.
Next, we turn to a political economist as we consider what Foxconn means for the regional economy. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The Foxconn groundbreaking in Mount Pleasant yesterday had a great fanfare from a visit from President Trump, but there are serious issues at stake in the state's support of this Taiwanese company, which makes iPhone screens. If you do a simple jobs calculus, the $3 billion incentive for $3,000 jobs doesn't look so great, but what will be opening the plant in the area? What will it attract in terms of manufacturing that is going to complement Foxconn? We also want to know how you feel about Foxconn. Do you expect it to have a big economic impact? Do you live in southeast Wisconsin? What's the mood among your family and friends? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Now we're going to be joined by Art Sear. He's an AW and Mary Margaret Clausen Distinguished Professor of Political Economy and World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha. Art, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for reciting the long title.
Yeah. Yes. I love people with long titles. Well, what does this development, what does this mean for the local economy and for the regional economy?
Well, it means a great deal of economic progress, I believe, over the long term. It also means considerable political turmoil, which we're already witnessing, as mm-hmm. well as some economic turmoil. It means change, and you quite rightly emphasized that in your introductory remarks.
So with the ceremonial groundbreaking this week, what's the timeline? What happens as Foxconn moves forward?
Well, I think public support will continue to grow. You mentioned $3 billion. It's going to be more like $4 billion. Mm. Given the leverage the company has exercised on local and county governments as well as state governments for additional financial incentives and support. So it's a moving target or an evolving situation, depending on your point of view.
So how did we get here?
Foxconn is the tip of a very, very large iceberg of tremendous and sustained industrial and commercial development in southeast Wisconsin and, for that matter, northeast Illinois and northwest Indiana. Over the last several decades, there's been a tremendous amount of investment by very high-profile companies, including Uline, close to home, but also Amazon, and also a lot of smaller companies. So it really is an indicator of great change.
I came from Nevada and I was covering Tesla, and a lot of people had the same criticisms of Tesla. Nevada is giving them too much money. But then Tesla opened up their Gigafactory, and then Google came and Yahoo came and Switch came. There were all sorts of high-tech companies from Silicon Valley that did not get incentives necessarily. Some did. And the economic area, the economic boom in that area is pretty stark. It's pretty amazing. Do you see that kind of thing happening in southeast Wisconsin, that Foxconn is coming and other companies are going to come in its tail?
Yes. And again, Foxconn represents a migration that's already going on. It's very interesting that you mentioned Nevada. It's a very creative point. Nevada is geographically proximate to California. Nevada has a history of not the most transparent government, given major industries' long-term problems with corruption in Nevada, as there are in Illinois, where I worked for 22 years. Nevada is right next door to California, which, whatever its problems, has basically pretty honest and transparent government, thanks directly to Wisconsin. There's a close integrated history between the two states, which is quite fascinating. I think the fact that Wisconsin, like California, is a relatively transparent state and relatively honest state politically, believe it or not, whatever the headlines might say, or people might emphasize, that's a big plus for the people of Wisconsin and for any investors.
So what I'm interested in is why Foxconn comes here when we're talking tariffs, and Harley-Davidson and other companies are moving their manufacturing overseas. What does Foxconn see out of this? Is that a more direct connection to California?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of location. Geography isn't everything, but it's important. And ironically, in a time of globalization, location can be even more important because big companies especially can move capital and, to some extent, labor remarkably quickly nowadays. To get more specific, about half of the interstate truck traffic in all of North America travels through, on a daily basis, our area, meaning the interstate highways to 94 and 94 and 90 and 80 in and around the Chicago area and in the Chicago-Milwaukee corridor. We are, in the greater Chicago area, a principal intermodal port. I think transportation is crucial, and location geographically is crucial to why so many companies, not just Foxconn, are moving into the area.
So let's talk about these jobs outside the Mount Pleasant area, people in northern Illinois, other parts of Wisconsin. Is this going to mean anything to them?
Yes, it will. Given the challenges that lower-income, lower-wage people face today, you find people who don't make a high wage commuting long distances. Mind you, this is anecdotal, but it's rather persuasive in terms of my point of view and experience. There are working people who commute from other states to work at the Amazon Distribution Center just west of Kenosha Racine that, you know, they'll stay in the area in a cheap motel or sometimes in their vehicles because, relatively speaking, the wages are high. At a more promising level and a more positive level, I think the job growth over the long term, not just the immediate several thousand jobs you mentioned, job growth over the long term should be pretty great.
And unemployment is kind of low, I think at 3.4% or something like that in Wisconsin. Are these jobs that are going to need skills, and do we have enough people to fill these jobs?
Yes. Again, the short answer, but that's always the oversimple.
So give me the long answer. You're a professor.
Be careful.
Give me
yeah,
the long answer.
When you ask an academic.
Right, exactly.
To be very specific, again, Professor Wen Ji Sun, a colleague in geospatial sciences, an expert on quantitative geographic analysis, which means human as well as physical data using very powerful computer programs, in particular one developed by ESRI, the ESRI Corporation. She and her students did a whole series of maps this last semester working with our Clausen Center on the likely economic impact of Foxconn. And within 15 minutes driving time, at most 30 minutes, the unemployed people available for these jobs, according to recorded unemployment, it's substantially larger than the number of jobs being offered. So if things work right and smoothly, which of course they never do in human relationships, but
right.
Work right and smoothly, you should have a significant impact on remaining unemployment.
I want to see those maps. That is fascinating to me. When we are talking about Foxconn and the $3 billion state incentive package, the concerns that people have are that it's too much for the benefit. Actually, we have a caller who wants to talk about that. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning. I think it's disgraceful. Good morning. The billions of our tax dollars are being spent on the worst type of corporate welfare. You know, in free enterprise, the taxpayers that are not getting a cut of the profit or the, you know, should not be subsidizing a company making billions of dollars, a profitable multinational company. The taxpayers, the long-range projections on jobs are going to be whatever it is, 25, 40 years into the future. We're being stolen from to the tune of billions of dollars.
Okay, that's thank you, Bernie. The other side of that, Todd from Green Bay actually called and couldn't stay on the line. He says people think Wisconsin is are throwing too much money at Foxconn, but he also says that the company chose to build here for other reasons, the state's economy and business-friendly tax policies. So it's not all about incentives. Where
yeah,
do you come
right.
out, Professor?
Oh, I think the caller makes a very good point that's has economic as well as obviously political dimensions, and you saw this point of view represented fairly dramatically, but in relatively muted fashion at the groundbreaking ceremony. The president obviously is a target for this kind of thing, but even if President Trump had not appeared, protesters would have been there.
Right.
We, thanks to Darwin Chin, who's from Taiwan, Foxconn is a Taiwan company, coincidentally, and Eric Johnson, two fine, younger, energetic faculty at the college. We had three public panels this last semester on Foxconn. We didn't have any violence. It's great that we did it. I made a serious mistake. It was my mistake and no one else's by not anticipating the very large public turnout and the very vociferous and concerned nature of a lot of the comments and conversation
you do understand, though.
People who were there. I mean, people are really, really energized by this.
Right.
So very glad we had that call from Bernie.
You do understand, though, that people really do feel like our state is giving money to a private entity, and there's no promise of what we can get back.
Quite right. The state is always doing that, and the most successful countries and economies in the world, in particular Great Britain, then and now, as well as the United States, have always done that. I mentioned transportation. Thanks to Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, a boost that was already going on in our early capitalist economy, the railroad, there was a tremendous expansion of construction by design, which involved a lot of subsidies. We enjoy the interstate highway system because a fellow named Dwight Eisenhower back in the 1950s pushed through this infrastructure development on national security grounds.
Mm.
The defense budget was more than half the federal budget back in those days.
I'm gonna challenge you on that, though, because the highway system wasn't that built by the federal government, and now we're giving, you know, this is giving money, state money, to a private company.
It was built by the federal government, but the federal government has very little in the way of actual specialized construction resources outside of the military. A huge array of private contractors were involved in constructing the highway system. If you're in favor of free enterprise, you should be in favor of the fact that we're this facility is being built by private capital with public help, not by public capital entirely.
Hmm.
The point I'm trying to make, maybe not clearly enough, is that the federal government from the beginning has been heavily involved in, and state governments as well, in subsidizing and supporting commercial and industrial activity. That's all. But transportation is key.
I
mentioned this long history. Transportation is key to why so many companies, not just Foxconn, are coming to this area.
Okay, so transportation is key. Can transportation be better? Are there going to be some dollars that we're going to have to put into transportation to make this really work?
Well, state and county governments, in particular in Racine, I believe, a lot of this money is for highway improvement and highway reconstruction, which has lagged under the Walker administration. I'm not making a partisan point in any way. I'm not being critical of the governor per se. But Wisconsin, which was a leader in highway construction and maintenance, and absence of the kind of corruption that has characterized Illinois historically, especially, has not been doing a particularly good job. Interestingly enough, Indiana, under Governor Mike Pence, put in place a very comprehensive transportation construction plan, which they're implementing to a degree.
So the challenges that rise up for local governments in and around the area of Foxconn, there's going to be people are going to be moving in. There are going to be property tax issues, perhaps. There's going to be a rise in housing prices. What do you see this doing to the economy when Foxconn opens? And when is it going to open, by the way?
Well, they're already hiring, and they're already constructing one initial building in Milwaukee, I believe. So again, the process has already begun. It'll be ongoing in terms of the total goals of Foxconn. In terms of local government, you make a crucial point, and people who are really interested in this, including activists like the gentleman we just talked to, should pay attention to what local government is doing. Mayor John Antaramian in Kenosha turned down the opportunity to bid for Foxconn facilities because he was and is skeptical. We were fortunate that both Jonathan Delagrave of Racine County and Dave DeGroote of Mount Pleasant participated in our panel series along with Mayor Antaramian. That was a major accomplishment by the faculty who put this together. And naturally, they were all well prepared, but especially Mr. DeGroote and Jonathan, to handle hostile questions.
Right.
But they have done a lot of homework on the likely benefits for the area. And they made a case, those who are positive, that it's already accruing.
We are talking about Foxconn. The groundbreaking was yesterday. It was kind of a big event. Today, we're looking at what the plant might actually do or not do for Wisconsin, and we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Catherine from Menominee, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. I'm calling because... good morning to you, too. Because this was a series of policy choices for the governor and the legislature. In my opinion, they are looking for the big win rather than investing in education as a magnet for high-skilled jobs, much as Minnesota has done. We need infrastructure. That has been a huge contention, at least out here. And in western Wisconsin, there are huge areas where there is no broadband to encourage high-tech businesses, small high-tech businesses. I just attended a meeting where there were a number of people attending. One of them was a small business person in order to get service from AT&T, has to pay $1,000 a month for his internet. There are thousands of startups, I believe the studies have shown, that could have been funded with the billions that were handed over to Foxconn. And okay. I have a son.
Okay, Catherine, I'm going to have to get back to take your question to our guest right now before we go to break. What do you say to this, Art, that there could have been investment in other parts of the state? And rural broadband is a huge issue.
Yes, it is. I don't want to sound like some kind of cheerleader for capitalism, but I think the marketplace is already sorting this out nationally and internationally, in the sense that the big cable companies who had initial dominance on service providing providing sophisticated content through the internet, their local monopolies are fading. A principal challenge is getting the internet to rural areas, and certainly I would applaud anything that was done by government entities, but also private capital to do that.
We are talking right now about Foxconn with Art Sear. He is a professor of economics at Carthage College. We're going to be back in a moment to talk more about what Foxconn means for the rest of the state. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Foxconn has reasserted itself in the news cycle this week with a grand groundbreaking event at Mount Pleasant, where the plant is going to be built. Scott Walker was there, of course, as were his fellow Republicans. President Trump showed up, and Democrats staged a protest nearby. What do you think of Foxconn? Do you think that Southeast Wisconsin can become a manufacturing hub? 1-800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're talking today with Arthur Sear. He directs the A.W. Clausen Center at Carthage College in Kenosha. We've got lots of calls, Art, and we're going to go to them right now. Rick from Milwaukee, welcome to the program.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering, have we learned anything historically about looking at GM and how a company like that will take over in an area and become the focus, and then suddenly the technology changes and they have to leave? Not suddenly, but after years and years. And again, they're supported by other industries and people around them, but they leave too. What is it that we're doing, or if we learned anything historically from it, to prevent that from happening with Foxconn?
Interesting question, Rick. Thank you very much about that. Art, technology changes, times change, factories go elsewhere and leave towns decimated. That's a fear. Are you there, Art? We don't seem to have Art on the program, so we're going to go
to... Can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, sorry, I could hear you.
So what do you think about Rick's question?
I heard the question loud and clear. It's a very important concern, consideration, and development. Capitalism's great virtue is that it works. It tends to be a pretty heartless process. To get very specific, GM was the dominant industry in Detroit for many years, along with Ford Motor Company and Chrysler. Detroit is troubled because manufacturing moved away, and I'm sure GM and other companies in the automobile industry have had a similar impact in other communities. That's the nature of capitalism and the disruption and fear. Fear itself, which was so evident at the first of the three panel discussions that I mentioned at Carthage College that we organized, that's a big factor, and part of the job of business people as well as politicians is to address that. A big reason why President Trump was elected is because of exactly the kind of anxiety and fear and unemployment that people are experiencing.
That is a good point, and that is a whole other show. Jerry from Lake Mills, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. The comment was made that Foxconn could locate most anywhere. Well, they could not. They need expansive access to water. And the Great Lakes is the largest freshwater lakes or pool of lakes in the world. And they could not just locate anywhere. They needed our water.
So they needed our water. Thank you for that, Jerry. They needed our water, Art. The water is a very large issue that people are also protesting in Foxconn. Give us an update on that.
They're not only protesting, they are litigating. The Department of Natural Resources, I believe now on two occasions, has okayed diversion of a substantial amount of Lake Michigan water to Foxconn, as probably maybe all of our listeners are well aware. I'm sure that these conflicts will continue to be sorted out in the courts. If you're a serious observer, and even if you're not, there's a gentleman, a younger journalist and scholar named Peter Annin, A-N-N-I-N, N like Nike, at Northland College in our area, who's written a book called The Great Lakes Water Wars, which I commend to anyone who's serious about these matters, and even if you're not, it impacts us. And he comments regularly in the media, perhaps on your program, about the Great Lakes. The Racine area, and Mount Pleasant specifically, is a kind of border area according to the Great Lakes Water Compact, which was reached about a decade ago, I believe, by state governments and Canadian provinces bordering the Great Lakes. It's ambiguous legally how much water can be diverted by these governments. the DNR says it's okay, but I'm quite sure this will be sorted out ultimately in litigation.
Jerry, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Mike in Burnham County. Mike, welcome to the program.
Morning.
Morning.
Thanks for the program, Carrie and Art.
Thank you.
Thank you. What's your question?
My question is, I'm trying to determine the ethical justification of some of the policy making. And what I mean by that is that it seems almost like we're picking some winners and losers, or not we, but a smaller group of Wisconsin citizens, where the public is at risk for a private profit motive, which is not bad, and certainly I hope that the Southeast Corner prospers. However, at the same time, we're taking however much money, billions, and devoting it to this situation as a policy decision, medical care, schools, potholes, foster care program go ill-funded. What that means to me as a resident of Southwest Wisconsin, I deal with all that stuff on a daily basis in both my professional career and simply when I drive down the roads, a local school, 60% free and reduced lunch.
Right. Thank you, Mike. Those are really good questions that, and another caller brought that up also. And we talked the other day about roads in the southwestern part of Wisconsin, which are really bad. We had some callers calling in. So that's a theme that keeps coming up, Art. We need money spent on infrastructure, schools, other things in the rest of the state, and we're throwing it at Foxconn. Why are we doing that?
Well, politicians, even more than the rest of us, because they have particularly challenging jobs, have a strong disposition to react to the immediate, including the immediate, in many ways, very attractive corporate pressure from Foxconn. As an academic comfortably sitting on the sidelines, I think the governor can be criticized for handling this in seemingly a rushed and rather secretive manner. For Wisconsin, it seemed more like Illinois to me, and for the first time, he is politically vulnerable. Look for leaders, and look for spokespeople, and look for analysts who are taking the long view. I mentioned this gentleman, Dwight Eisenhower, who was criticized, despite his enormous public popularity, was criticized especially by academics as the do-nothing president. Good old Ike, you know, but he's not getting any... Well, he got the interstate highway system done, and a big problem for us today is it is literally falling apart,
right.
And we don't have that kind of leadership. He diverted the defense budget, for God's sake, using very, very clever, because as I mentioned before, the defense budget was where the vast majority of the money was in this country then. Fortunately, that's not the case now, but look for leaders who can get the job done. My youngest son, Jay, a very, very promising amateur historian, used to say, you know, President Eisenhower always got the job done, Dad. Look for those kinds of leaders. It tends to be antithetical to the ability to get elected. President Trump did put forward, briefly it seems, a proposal to mobilize private capital for renovating desperately needed the interstate highway system. But like things generally in Washington, especially nowadays, something was said and something was tweeted, and there's been nothing since. Look for men and women who get the job done.
Look for men and women who get the job done. Scott in Green Bay, what is your question? Welcome to the program.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I don't think we should allow this corporation to operate with the privilege that we give them of limited liability for their owners, shareholders, and management, given the water that they're going to extract from the Great Lakes Basin. You know, if something goes wrong with that water, pollution, whatever, luckily we can, I guess, we could always revoke their corporate charter, or in this case, revoke their certificate of authority to operate within our state if something goes wrong. It seems like the so-called science of economics always leaves that out of their free market models, you know, limited liability privileges we grant them.
That's an interesting question, Scott. Foxconn's limited liability, what if something goes wrong? What is going to happen with the water? Are we going to end up maybe with a Superfund site like we have done in the past with companies that we have not given limited liability to? How does this work?
Well, Foxconn has limited liability, but it does have liability. I think it's important to keep the pressure on, and the last caller reflects the fact that political pressure will continue and increase, especially if Wisconsin elects a Democratic governor and the Democrats get a majority in the legislature. But even if they don't, this is a state with a tremendous history of political activism, like California, and Wisconsin directly inspired California, like I said before. I have no doubt that there will be sustained efforts to shine lights on Foxconn, and public officials, including the governor, have been very careful to state and provide some detail to the public about the kind of liability that Foxconn has. Foxconn has a poor reputation in Asia. One young man, I believe it was in 2010, committed suicide after being beaten up by Foxconn security officials in mainland China. Foxconn security officials because he lost a prototype cell phone in his possession. That truly is shocking.
There actually were a number of suicides that were reported in Foxconn in China. We've got very little time left. We're going to get to some callers and from Monona.
They can't get away with that in this country, and they won't. Excuse me.
That's good. And from Monona.
Hi. Well, Scott Walker signed the Grover Norquist pledge not to raise taxes, and Walker has interpreted that as if you do have to raise taxes, you lower other taxes, which means less money, even than, you know, he's already decreased for schools and roads and, you know, all kinds of state services, which have fallen under Governor Walker. So where is this $4 billion or more going to be paid from?
Okay, and thank you for that question. We have very little time. Art, where is this $4 billion coming from?
Well, as the caller indicated, it will be taken from other areas that might be more fully funded. Walker has been hard on education. In practical terms, there are educational benefits to the Foxconn investment. Brian Albrecht, a very effective long-term president of Gateway Technical College, is putting into place, as we speak, programs for training of technicians directly related to Foxconn's needs. Our president at Carthage, John Swallow, someone from the central administration at our place, came over to see me a few weeks ago to talk about the president's thinking on perhaps language training and other things a liberal arts college can do to facilitate the population as a whole, as well as this company in Wisconsin. We have a new nursing program that seems made to order for at least some of the needs of enormous new corporate presence in the region.
Arthur Scheer.
Right, there are trade-offs, and that's why the governor is vulnerable.
Ah, Arthur Scheer is a professor of political economy and world business at Carthage College in Kenosha. We've been talking about Foxconn. Thanks for talking with us, Arthur.
Well, my pleasure, and very interesting. Thank you.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.